What if the most deeply terrifying moments in finance, those specific days when checking your portfolio feels like, I don't know, a genuine act of masochism, are actually the most profitable?
It's so counterintuitive, isn't it?
Completely.
But we're talking about this this deep contrast between the widespread, paralyzing emotional exhaustion that most people feel, and then the quiet, calculated action taken by people who really get the mechanics.
Fortunes aren't made in the euphoria.
No. They're cemented during the great revaluation.
Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're taking the stack of sources you sent, overall focused on investor behavior, financial history, and risk management. And we're going to pull out the frameworks you need.
Yeah, you're looking for structure and insight to navigate these, well, incredibly choppy waters.
And our mission is to deliver that, but without the panic.
So our deep dive today, it really centers on three crucial pillars. First, we have to analyze the psychological forces that just grip retail investors during these sustained downturns. It's more than just being scared.
It's about specific biases that just hijack your decision making.
Exactly.
Second, we'll dive into the historical record. We want to show that these severe cycles, you know, from the biggest crises of the 21st century to collapses like the crypto winter, they're brutal, absolutely, but they are never final.
That resilience is the bedrock.
Right. And then finally, we'll unpack the most powerful systematic tool that, frankly, institutional investors use to enforce discipline: portfolio rebalancing.
And we're going past the simple definition here. We're going to look at the math, the triggers, and, you know, the psychological friction that comes with selling your winners to buy what look like your losers.
Okay, let's unpack this. We should start with the state of mind, right? Where the average person is right now.
Let's do it.
So our sources, they paint a really specific picture of the emotional landscape for retail investors. The words they use are just. They're so heavy, scared, confused, exhausted.
And tired of seeing red. That one comes up a lot.
It does. And this isn't just disappointment we're talking about. This is chronic psychological stress.
Yeah. And I think it's essential to move beyond just saying people are scared and really define why that emotional state is so destructive. What we're seeing is a collision of powerful behavioral biases.
And the main one is?
Loss aversion. The pain of realizing a loss is felt, psychologically, about twice as powerfully as the pleasure you get from an equivalent gain.
Twice as powerful. That multiplier is staggering when you think about a portfolio that's been leading for, say, 18 months.
Right. Every time you open the app, it's just reinforcing that painful loss signal. It just drains the mental energy you need to make a rational call.
And that leads to something critical the sources talk about: paralysis.
Precisely. When the default emotion becomes dread, you hit peak despair, and the rational brain just, it kind of shuts down.
You're frozen by fear.
Exactly. You stop monitoring. You stop adjusting. You just wish the whole problem would go away. And that is the ultimate gift to the patient tactical investor.
And that's the profound contrast you mentioned right at the top. While the retail public is just paralyzed, the sources explicitly say that smart money is doing the quiet, painstaking work.
Repositioning and accumulating. They're moving against that prevailing tide of sentiment.
Yeah.
We really have to understand the distinction here between institutional action and retail action. A lot of retail investors operate based on what's called anchoring bias.
Okay, so they anchor their expectation to the previous high, like Bitcoin at 69,000 or some stock price before a crash.
Exactly. So selling feels like you're locking in a failure relative to that anchor point you have stuck in your head.
Whereas the professional investor, they're using methodologies that just inherently ignore that past price.
Right. They're looking at current valuation metrics. They're looking at adoption rates, macro liquidity conditions. Their decisions are framed by quantitative rules, not by memory.
That's the difference.
It is. Smart money gets that when retail investors are suffering from maximum loss aversion and anchoring, assets are very likely to be mispriced compared to their long-term value.
So accumulation at this stage, it's not emotional timing.
Not at all. It's a process of disciplined valuation hunting.
Let's anchor this with the prime example from the sources, the 2018 crypto winter. I mean, that is a textbook case study in sentiment collapse.
Oh, that period was just merciless. If you track the actual metrics, Bitcoin, it plummeted from nearly $20,000 in late 2017 all the way down to about $3,500 by December 2018.
That's an 82% fall.
Over 82%. And for anyone holding newer altcoins, the drawdowns were 90, 95% or worse.
The financial loss was obviously severe, but the psychological fallout was You could argue it was even more damaging. It just shattered the entire belief system.
Yeah, the sources note that the masses didn't just sell. They completely swore off the asset class.
A total psychological disavowal.
That's it. That is the final stage of market capitulation.
Okay, what is capitulation exactly?
It's where the last sellers, the ones who held on through the worst of it but finally just break, they dump their assets at any price they can get.
And for the smart investor, that's the signal.
That's the supply exhaustion moment. When the people who say, I'll never touch it again, finally leave the arena, the supply overhang just clears.
And this flips directly into what the sources call the cycle of conviction. And to really get it, you have to look at the inverse, the bull run.
You do, because during the bull run, when prices are just soaring, investors often suffer from acute confirmation bias.
Every tick up confirms their perceived brilliance.
They believe they are geniuses. Risk management becomes a joke. Taking profit. That feels like a betrayal of the whole upward movement.
You hear the narrative shift, right? This time is different. We found the true value. The momentum feels unstoppable, and it's reinforced by everyone around you, by the media.
The environment actively punishes prudence. If you sell early, you suffer that psychological pain of leaving money on the table.
But once that switch flips, the pessimism becomes just pathologically entrenched.
In a market that's down 80%, any optimism is just met with cynicism, not interest. Trying to talk about long-term value or future upside, it's futile.
Because the investor's immediate painful reality has just overwritten any theoretical future.
And that's the insight that's maybe the most difficult to internalize. Retail emotions swing from hubris to despair, but the underlying market cycles, they are utterly indifferent.
The market doesn't care about your P&L, your fear, or your excitement.
Not at all. It just processes supply and demand.
And that indifference is the core of the strategy.
It is. Disciplined investors realize that when the crowd loses its conviction, when that psychological pain is at its absolute maximum, that's the moment when the underlying value and the future potential are at their greatest distortion.
So if the market's psychological forces, especially things like loss aversion and anchoring, are so powerful, how does a disciplined investor practically structure their actions to overcome that, you know, that innate pressure to either panic or get too greedy?
They establish objective, systematic rules long before the volatility arrives, making sure their moves are mechanical, not emotional.
We're transitioning now to the essential historical context. The sources really emphasize that financial cycles, crises, recessions, liquidity shocks, they're undeniably brutal. But they're also fundamentally and historically never final.
And that perspective provides the long-term conviction you need.
The word brutal is key, though. We shouldn't romanticize these downturns.
No, absolutely not. They involve real economic suffering. I mean, think back to the sheer scale of the historical events they cite. The dot-com bubble bursting in 2000 and the global credit crisis of 2008.
These were systemic events. They tested the very fabric of the financial system.
Right. Let's look at the aftermath of the 2000 tech collapse. The NASDAQ lost nearly 80% of its value from its peak in March 2000 to its low in October 2002.
So this wasn't a quick correction.
Not at all. It was a multi-year grind that just wiped out a generation of tech companies and retail savings.
And yet, what was the consistent pattern that emerged?
Resilience. Mm-hmm. While you had Pets.com and a lot of these unsustainable e-commerce ventures just vanish, the core infrastructure of the internet survived. And eventually thrived.
So Amazon and eBay, though they were severely battered, they were anti-fragile.
Exactly. The technology itself, the fiber optics, the broadband, the software, it didn't disappear. It just became cheaper to acquire and develop on top of.
That distinction is so important. The weak speculation disappears, but the fundamental technology survives.
Mm-hmm. And it's a similar story with the 2008 financial crisis. That was a catastrophe rooted in complex debt and the housing market.
The housing market was devastated. Major financial institutions needed bailouts or they failed entirely. Unemployment soared.
Yes. Yet if you look at the recovery that followed, the system reset. Jobs eventually came back, consumer demand normalized, and key sectors like established tech and healthcare. They accelerated their growth significantly after 2010.
So the consistent theme is that the system is fundamentally designed for long-term expansion.
Even if that expansion is punctuated by these severe, necessary purges of excess speculation.
The system always resets, and the next expansionary phase returns.
And if you truly internalize that historical truth, then a crash, even one as bad as the 2018 crypto winter, it stops being a death sentence.
It becomes a phase transition. a painful but temporary period of deep value creation.
Right. Let's apply that lens back to the 2018 Bitcoin crash from 20,000 to 3,500. At the time, every single narrative was signaling failure.
But the sources labeled this disaster a golden moment.
And it was a golden moment that was only accessible to those with just profound psychological fortitude. Imagine how hard it would be to deploy capital into an asset that the entire financial establishment is mocking, calling it garbage, actively declaring it dead.
That requires you to completely disconnect your immediate emotional reality from the historical trajectory.
It does. And that quiet accumulation that was happening under the surface, that sustained, methodical buying when the news cycle was just toxic, that became the necessary, stable foundation for the massive bull run that peaked around 2021.
The few who bought at 3,500, they weren't trying to call the absolute bottom.
No, they were simply executing a long-term plan in what they identified as a deep value zone.
Whoa! I mean, imagine the operational difficulty, let alone the psychological weight, of committing, say, $5,000 every single month to an asset that is just constantly hitting new lows.
Right.
That ability to see the future reset, to trust the historical cycle over the present pain, that is just, it's fascinating.
It demands a level of objective detachment that very few retail investors ever achieve.
And that difficulty really highlights why discipline is such a powerful differentiator. When sentiment collapses, these opportunities aren't just lying around waiting.
No, they were covered in mud and volatility and negative press. They look like disasters.
So only those with cash reserves and a predefined systematic approach, a plan they committed to in writing when they were calm, can actually execute during that panic.
They're positioning themselves quietly for the next wave while the general public is paralyzed. They're wasting critical time debating whether the bottom has arrived or if the asset is going to go to zero.
And this systematic positioning is what separates successful accumulation from just gambling?
It moves the investor away from timing the market and towards time in the market.
But I have to push back a little here. Okay, so if I'm systematically accumulating a beaten down asset like Bitcoin at 3,500, that's great. But if a systematic rule forces me to sell a high-flying winner early, don't I severely limit my upside? Don't I suffer a huge opportunity cost?
That is the essential conflict disciplined investors face. You exchange the chance for maximum theoretical profit for the guarantee of maximum risk control. And that is the definition of a true strategy.
Okay, we've established the chaos of emotion and the certainty of cycles. Now let's focus on the systematic solution. Portfolio rebalancing. The sources call this one of the simplest yet most robust tools out there.
They do.
So what's the sophisticated, practical definition we need here?
It's definitely more than just shuffling assets around. Rebalancing is a formalized risk management protocol. It's designed to automate disciplined behavior.
Its function is to neutralize that emotional drift that just inevitably happens during extreme market moves.
The very greed and fear we were just talking about, yes.
And the key, as we noted before, is that this framework, it explicitly ignores the impossible task of timing the exact top or bottom.
Absolutely. It operates solely on maintaining a predefined risk profile.
So the process starts with a clear target allocation.
Right.
Right. Established when you're rational and calm.
Exactly. Let's correct and expand on the example in your source material, which outlined a conservative approach for challenging markets. We'll adjust the initial figures to total 100%, just for clarity, but we'll keep the same proportional risk. So let's say 20% crypto, 35% stocks, 25% gold or commodities, and 20% cash. That's your strategic target.
That's the ideal state. The risk profile that lets you sleep at night. But the market immediately starts changing that balance. That's what we call market drift.
Drift is just the natural byproduct of differential returns. So let's imagine our $100,000 portfolio starts with that 23-5, 25-20 split. A year goes by, and we've had a massive tech-led rally.
Okay.
Our stock allocation has jumped maybe by 40%. And our smaller crypto allocation, it's quadrupled. A high-risk, high-return asset doing what it does.
So our initial 20% in crypto is now potentially 40% of the total portfolio value.
Right. While our conservative cash position has shrunk proportionally, maybe to only 10%.
And that's the danger. The portfolio value feels fantastic.
Yeah.
But your risk profile has fundamentally exploded.
It's exploded.
Yeah.
You're now massively overweight in the high volatility assets, precisely when those assets are arguably most vulnerable to a big correction.
You're unintentionally taking on maximum risk right before the inevitable downturn.
You've allowed greed and confirmation bias to push you way beyond your original comfortable risk tolerance, all without actually making a new strategic decision.
So rebalancing is the necessary surgical countermeasure to that drift.
It enforces the original contract you made with yourself. And now we break down the core mechanism, which it feels deeply counterintuitive to human psychology.
Okay, part one. You must systematically sell the assets that have grown too heavy.
This is where the emotional friction is just. It's at its highest during a bull run. If your crypto allocation hit 40%, you have to sell that 20% surplus. You have to realize the gains and bring the weighting back to the 20% target.
You're being forced to take profits from a winning horse that everyone else is telling you to ride even harder.
And that action ensures you monetize the volatility. When sentiment is peaking, you are quietly distributing your assets to the newcomers who are buying in late. You're guaranteeing you realize those gains before the correction hits.
Okay, and part two is the inverse, and it's equally painful during a downturn.
It is. You have to buy more of what has fallen behind or what now makes up a smaller proportion of your portfolio.
So if the stock market crashed, dragging my 35% stock allocation down to 25%.
You must use the cash you generated from selling your winning crypto, mm-hmm. plus your existing cash reserves, to buy stocks and bring that allocation back up to 35%.
Which forces disciplined accumulation when the headlines are just screaming recession.
And the outcome is always the same. Everything returns to the original desired risk targets. This is the beauty of the systematic approach. You're not guessing.
You're just following predefined rules.
That's right. It neutralizes both the fear of buying a declining asset and the greed of holding a runaway winner for too long.
You know, I still wrestle with this. That vulnerable admission, it's very real for me. If I'm looking at a high-flying asset and the rebalancing rule says sell a 20% surplus, I know I'm locking in a profit, but the fear of missing a subsequent 50% jump is just intense.
Of course.
Rebalancing is hard because it feels fundamentally wrong in the moment.
But that emotional discomfort is the true indicator that the strategy is working.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That discomfort is the signal that you are acting against the crowd's momentum. Think of it this way. The primary goal isn't maximizing returns. It's maximizing risk-adjusted returns and surviving multiple cycles intact.
So the systematic investor accepts that they'll never hit the absolute peak.
But they also guarantee they will never ride their riskiest assets all the way back down to the bottom.
Let's look a little deeper at the rationale behind that specific conservative allocation we cited. 20% crypto, 35% stocks, 25% gold, and 20% cash. This structure is really designed for resilience.
Absolutely. The sources emphasize the protective nature of that small 20% crypto allocation. The confidence it gives you is immense.
Yeah.
Even in a catastrophic scenario, if crypto drops 50% overnight, your overall portfolio loss is constrained to only 10% of your total capital.
The remaining 80% just buffers the shock.
It's capital preservation first.
Okay, so the 35% in stocks is there as the primary engine for long-term wealth.
Yep. It leverages that historical resilience we talked about earlier, betting on the anti-fragile nature of the global economy to drive that incremental growth over decades.
And the 25% in gold and other commodities? That's the historic safe haven.
It is. These are scarce assets that typically act as a hedge against inflation, geopolitical instability, and currency devaluation. They tend to do well when confidence in fiat currency or the system wavers. They act as ballast.
And finally, that 20% in cash. This is often the most undervalued component.
Oh, for sure. The sources note that this cash reserve provides essential psychological calm during market dips. It's the dry powder you need to execute the buying side of the rebalancing mechanism.
Without that dedicated cash reserve, when a market crash happens, you'd be forced to sell other, maybe stable assets just to buy the dip in the volatile ones.
Cash ensures optionality, and that is crucial for methodical, stress-free buying during high volatility.
And this process of buying in chunks of averaging prices during rebalancing, it removes that immense pressure of trying to perfectly time the absolute bottom.
You just deploy capital systematically as the price declines, knowing that eventually the cycle will turn.
So whether an investor chooses a time-based trigger rebalancing quarterly or annually, or a threshold-based trigger.
Like rebalancing when an allocation deviates by, say, plus or minus 5 or 10%.
Right. Whatever they choose, the sources confirm this is one of the most powerful systematic habits an investor can possibly build.
Let's break down the advantages one last time.
Okay. It aligns your portfolio with your long-term strategy, cutting out the noise.
It quietly forces you to take profits when assets are soaring.
It mandates the purchase of cheaper, undervalued assets so you can exploit those golden moments of deep psychological despair.
And most critically, it ensures your decisions are driven by disciplined rules, not transient emotions. That systematic approach is the real, measurable edge.
So if adopting this systematic framework of rebalancing is so effective at neutralizing emotion and maximizing survival, what is the single greatest risk an investor runs if they just willfully ignore this habit?
The unchecked growth of risk exposure during periods of irrational euphoria, which leads to a guarantee of maximum pain and potential capitulation during the next inevitable brutal downturn.
We've taken a pretty deep dive here into the contrast between market psychology and just mechanical strategy.
Yeah.
Let's synthesize the core takeaways that you, the listener, really need to carry forward.
Okay. Insight number one. Market cycles are an undeniable, inevitable force that operates completely independently of human emotion.
Right. The widespread fear or the exhilarating greed, it only serves to create massive pricing inefficiencies.
It doesn't dictate the long-term outcome.
Okay, insight number two.
The periods that are defined by maximum sentiment collapse, the exhaustion, the psychological disavowal of assets, those are precisely the foundational moments for future wealth creation.
Those are the golden moments where disciplined investors are quietly accumulating.
And insight number three gives us the actionable solution. Portfolio rebalancing is the systematic, rule-based protocol that allows an investor to manage risk and enforce discipline.
It ensures profit realization during rallies, and it mandates buying during crashes. It lets you navigate the extremes without emotional interference.
We started by asking why smart money moves when everyone else freezes. And the answer, ironically, is that the movement is kind of boring.
It's based on a boring, methodical schedule.
Yeah.
Sell the winner, buy the loser. It takes the emotional drama completely out of the equation.
The market doesn't reward those who are constantly trying to be brilliant. It consistently rewards those who are disciplined and patient enough to follow their own rules.
Especially when those rules feel painfully wrong in the short term.
Exactly. It's a game of survival and consistency, not speed.
Which leads us to our final reflective thought, this lesson. This lesson in creating systematic, rule-based frameworks.
Well,
it extends so far beyond just finance.
Oh, yeah.
If we can establish clear allocation targets and rebalancing rules for our investments, what other high-stakes areas of life could benefit from the exact same rigorous discipline?
Think about personal development, or your career strategy, or just maintaining long-term physical health. How often do we let the short-term excitement of some new project, or the fear of a difficult conversation, push us off our established long-term targets?
That's a great point. If you define your target allocation of time and energy, say 50% career, 30% relationships, 20% health, and you suddenly find yourself 80% allocated to a panicked, overwhelming project, you're over-risked.
You are. And rebalancing in life means systematically cutting back on that overwhelming project, realizing the profit of regained time, and reallocating resources back to the declining yet essential components like your relationships or exercise.
It's about designing a better system to combat our inherently flawed emotional nature. That's the framework you need to build this week.
Indeed.
Thank you for providing the source material for this extensive deep dive into market cycles and the discipline of rebalancing. We hope these systematic frameworks give you the confidence to navigate whatever the market throws next.
And if you have your own complex stack of articles or research papers or notes, whether they're covering sophisticated topics like supply chain elasticity, decentralized governance models, or the latest breakthroughs in material science, send them to us. We thrive on distilling that complexity into clear, actionable knowledge.
Send in your own sources for a custom deep dive. Until then, remember, stay curious, and above all, stay disciplined.